I'm Eric Rosales. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, critical hour. President Trump departs the G7 early as the conflict between Israel and Iran escalates. We're at the White House. Pastoral message. After a surge of immigration enforcement across the country, the leader of the U.S. Catholic bishops responds. Seeking answers. A House panel is set to investigate Planned Parenthood's use of federal funding. What this could mean for the nation's largest abortion providers. Plus, a return to tradition. What Pope Leo XIV is planning to do next month that hasn't been done in years. These stories and much more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you so much for being with us on the feast day of St. Albert Shimlovsky, the founder of the Albertine Brothers and Sisters. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump sends a strong message to Iran. He wants their unconditional surrender. He warns the United States, quote, knows exactly where the so-called supreme leader is hiding, implying that the leader could be easily killed. The president met today with his national security team hours after cutting his trip to Canada short for the G7 summit. For the very latest, let's check in with White House correspondent Owen Jensen. Owen.
Eric, as Israel and Iran trade strikes, trade attacks on each other, what comes next, of course, remains unknown. More negotiations, a ceasefire, or more fighting, including the possible use of bunker-busting bombs. President Trump will have to decide.
Back from Alberta, President Donald Trump warning today in a post on Truth Social, we now have complete and total control of the skies over Iran. Overnight on Air Force One, the president telling reporters,
Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. Very simple. Not to go too deep into it, they just can't have a nuclear weapon.
And President Trump says he's looking for better than a ceasefire.
A real end, not a ceasefire. An end.
So something that will be permanent.
Yeah. Giving up entirely. That's okay too.
Vice President J.D. Vance writes, I have yet to see a single good argument for why Iran needed to enrich uranium well above the threshold for civilian use. I've yet to see a single good argument for why Iran was justified in violating its non-proliferation obligations. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu claimed that Israeli strikes on Iran's nuclear sites have set the country's nuclear program back a very, very long time. But Israel has not been able to reach Iran's Fordo uranium enrichment facility, built deep into a mountainside. Hitting it would require the U.S. to get involved militarily and deploy B-2 stealth bombers to drop its 30,000-pound bunker-busting bomb.
And those are the key to really taking out the entire nuclear program.
President Trump also warns Iran not to retaliate against U.S. troops.
Oh, we'll come down so hard if they do anything to our people. We'll come down so hard that the gloves are off so beautifully.
In London, the Iranian ambassador to the United Kingdom tells the Foreign Affairs Committee,
Iran does not seek war or escalation, but we will not hesitate to defend our people, our territory, and our sovereignty.
And at the U.S. State Department this afternoon,
for generations, the Middle East has been dealing with the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism, with the attack on Israel on October 7th by Hamas, reminding us of what's at stake.
Another development tonight, Israel says it killed a top Iranian general. And President Trump also warned Iran today, quote, our patience is wearing thin. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
For more analysis, let's now turn to Jonathan Saya, a research analyst at the Foundation for Defense for Democracies and focusing on Israel, China, and Iran. Thanks for being with us. The big question right now is what's next for the United States? As we know, a second aircraft carrier strike group is headed to the region along with more F-22s and F-16s. In your opinion, what options does the president have?
So when it comes to the Iranian nuclear issue specifically, the president has been very vocal about the issue of dismantlement. Iran should fully move forward with disarmament of its nuclear program. Unfortunately, they were not able to achieve that objective through the multiple rounds of negotiations, which is what led us to this point. And thanks to Israel, their air defense system has been, the Iranian air defense system, that is, has been greatly decimated. So that has paved the way for a potential attack on their Fordo nuclear nuclear site, which happens to be mostly underground, which is why it's critical to use B-2 or B-52 bunker buster bombers.
Yeah, exactly. As you were mentioning, that Fordo nuclear site, that's one of the key targets right there. Now, does the United States actually, would they be able to destroy this with just one go, or would this be an ongoing assault?
So attacking Iranian nuclear sites as a whole would have been a campaign, and that is something that Israel has launched for the past few days. But when it comes to specifically taking out Fordo, at this point in time, the campaign is already underway. Their infrastructure, when it comes to both military and different assets, has been destroyed, which means the campaign has achieved its objective of weakening Iranian deterrence. Of course, they still have a ballistic missile stockpile that they continue to launch against Israel, but those, I think at this point, there should be maybe 1,000 left. So when it comes to the nightly assaults against Israel, they're gradually losing that momentum as well. So realistically, one strike or two on Fordo is the idea, at least. But it depends on the Iranian retaliation afterwards, whether they will escalate this to full-scale war against the United States or whether they will take their losses to try to save face.
And let's say that the United States did enter the conflict but failed to destroy the nuclear facility. What would happen next, would you think?
Well, that would depend on the way in which it was carried out.
Right.
What we've seen with Fordo specifically is that because it's very underground, it might be a bit challenging, but ultimately the aim is to eliminate their capacity to enrich uranium.
Got it.
And a targeted bombing campaign would be very likely to achieve that objective.
And another objective is also bringing a regime change, is it not?
Well, we've seen contradictory strategies from Israel and the United States both. If they were to pursue regime change, number one, the supreme leader would have already been out. I think he's been kept alive in case he wants to agree to some sort of a dismantlement deal. In addition to that, in order to meaningfully pursue regime change, there needs to be a coordinated messaging effort for the Iranian people because they continue to be the main leverage against the regime. And we have not seen that so far with either Israel or America.
Now, Jonathan, we only have a few seconds left, but why do you think Russia has stayed so quiet about this?
Because Russia has long relied on Iranian missiles itself. Russia does not have the capabilities anymore to come and help, given that they were, in fact, the ones importing Iranian both missiles and UAVs.
Well, Jonathan Syed, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Turning now to Gaza, where witnesses are describing the horror of seeing Israeli forces open fire on Palestinians waiting for aid trucks.
We went to get a bag of flour. We moved a little forward at the crossroads. The people went to check on their houses. They fired an F-16 missile directly targeting the lands next to us. After a while, they fired an F-16 missile again. People were in huge numbers. Now they're lying in the street, about the same number as those who were evacuated to hospital. There are people under the rubble they cannot reach. And after the two missiles, they fired random shells and gunfire. Whoever could escape, escaped. Whoever could not was martyred. And the injuries are terrible, most of them in the neck and abdomen.
Israeli forces say that they're aware of the incident and are looking into it. The event marks the highest reported number of people killed while seeking aid over the past few weeks in the enclave. This comes as two members of the World Health Organization testified that Gaza health system is at a breaking point.
We just received report of another mass casualty incident with hundreds of car casualties, completely overwhelming Nasser medical complex.
We are walking the fine gray line between operational capacity and full disaster every day. This means that services are barely available.
Almost all the casualties in Gaza in recent days have been linked to delivery of aid rather than Israeli strikes on Hamas targets. Ukrainian officials say more than a dozen are dead and more than 150 injured following a Russian drone and missile bombardment in Kyiv. Video shared with Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky shows the destruction by what he says were more than 400 drones. He called it one of the most terrifying strikes on the capital. Authorities say a 9-story building was demolished as explosions echoed across the capital for almost 9 hours. This comes as Russia has stepped up attacks on Ukrainian civilian areas in recent weeks. Well, back here in Washington, D.C., Senate Republicans released the text for their version of the One Big Beautiful Bill. It has significant changes than the House version. The Senate bill calls for bigger cuts to Medicaid, child tax credits, and state and local taxes, all thorny issues for House Republicans. Republican Senator Steve Daines is backing the Senate version.
The Senate version here is, has made some improvements on what the House sent over to us. So I like it. I support it. We've got a few little spots we've got to resolve with our House colleagues and a few of our Senate colleagues as well. That's all part of the legislative process.
On Medicaid, Republicans argue they want the program to benefit Medicaid those provisions. Who need it.
To hear Democrats talk, you'd think Republicans were getting ready to rip Medicaid from the hands of needy children and pregnant women. And nothing, Mr. President, nothing could be further from the truth. We're making some common sense reforms to Medicaid to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse.
Those reforms have not been finalized, but the Senate version calls for lower provider tax credits and has more stringent work requirements. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer warns the cuts will affect health care for millions.
When these hospitals close next year, and you know they moved up the deadline for these cuts, so that real world hospitals have no chance to survive, don't come to us. Don't try to shrug your shoulders and say, I don't know why this happened. It happened because you voted for this plan.
On state and local tax deductions, commonly known as SALT, the House raised the benefit to $40,000, while the Senate plans to keep the current $10,000 in place. Republican members of the House SALT caucus from high-tax states say no deal, writing in part, quote, we have been crystal clear that the SALT deal we negotiated in good faith with the Speaker and the White House must remain in the final bill. They've already threatened to sink the bill containing much of President Trump's domestic policy agenda, and the Senate version reduces the House-approved child tax credit by several hundred dollars.
The American people know that Republicans are trying to scam them, and the more they know, the worse it gets.
The Senate hopes to have the bill on the floor by late next week and hopes to get it to the president's desk by the July 4th deadline. Well, heightened security remains concerns front and center on Capitol Hill after the deadly shootings in Minnesota over the weekend. The shootings are the latest in a number of previous attacks on lawmakers, including former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and others in their home district. The attacks have sparked calls from lawmakers to increase safety measures, including personal security details.
I've had some pretty serious threats just in recent days back home, even in North Dakota. And so realizing that, I think that where the real security threats are not in Washington, D.C. or on Capitol Hill so much as when we're traveling and when we're back home. And I think we have to face that reality as members and look at opportunities and maybe some resources to help members.
Right now, Capitol Police have increased security for both Minnesota Senators Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith, who were reportedly additional targets of the suspected assassin. Congressional leaders have also urged Capitol Police to boost security measures for all members of Congress. Well, we still have a lot more to come on EWTN News Nightly, including a House committee is setting its sights on Planned Parenthood, what it wants to find out about the organization's funding and how Planned Parenthood is fighting back. And Pope Leo XIV is renewing a centuries-old tradition. That and more still ahead. Welcome back. The president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has released a statement following a surge of immigration enforcement across the country. In recent days, the Trump administration has prioritized deportations in cities like Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York. However, it paused arrest in industries that rely heavily on foreign-born labor, such as restaurants, farms, and hotels. And this week, Archbishop Timothy Broglio offered a reflection on behalf of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, saying in part, quote, in the context of a gravely deficient immigration system, the mass arrests and removal of our neighbors, friends, and family members on the basis of immigration status alone represent a profound social crisis before which no person of goodwill can remain silent. On behalf of my brother bishops, I want to assure all those affected by actions which tear at the fabric of our communities of the solidarity of your pastors. As your shepherds, your fear echoes in our hearts, and we make your pain our own. Count on the commitment of all of us to stand with you in this challenging hour. The Department of Defense has changed which command will oversee Greenland. The Danish territory was previously under the umbrella of the U.S. European Command. Now it's under U.S. Northern Command, which oversees the U.S. homeland. The move is mostly symbolic, but further underscores President Trump's desire to acquire Greenland for America. Planned Parenthood has long denied using federal funds to pay for abortion procedures. Now, a House Oversight Subcommittee looking into government efficiency will investigate deeper. The subcommittee headed by Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene will look into Planned Parenthood's use of federal funds. The panel wants to know why federal funds have increased, along with the number of abortions provided by Planned Parenthood. The investigation will also look into why the organization has become a major player in gender-affirming care. The subcommittee gave Planned Parenthood until June 27th to produce documents, including financial statements. And joining us now to discuss more on this investigation is Katie Glenn Daniel with the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. Katie, thanks for being with us again. As we know, Planned Parenthood was the recipient of nearly $800 million in federal funds in 2023. Now, the subcommittee is concerned that the organization is using the federal funds inappropriately. Give me your thoughts.
Well, the subcommittee is right to be concerned. We're grateful to Chairwoman Green on this important investigation. It's a great question that the American public deserves answers to. Why is it that every single thing Planned Parenthood does, other than abortion, sex changes, and political spending, has gone down, and yet their government money has gone up? We need answers, and the House needs to get to the bottom of why they are giving hundreds of millions of dollars and performing over 400,000 abortions a year.
And right now, the Trump administration is seeking to cut off Medicaid funds to Planned Parenthood in the budget reconciliation package known as the One Big Beautiful Bill. Democrats actually held a press conference today. Let's listen in.
We're here today to decry the backdoor abortion ban that Republicans have put in to their reconciliation bill, to their appropriations reconciliation bill. We're going to fight it with everything we have.
This bill would effectively ban health insurance on the ACA marketplaces from covering abortion. This would send a shockwave through the country and put abortion care out of reach for women.
Katie, give me your thoughts on what Senate Democrats said.
Once again, Senate Democrats are out of step with the American people. Americans do not want to pay for abortions. These businesses are not good stewards of our taxpayer dollars. Everything they do that's healthcare related is going down. Everything they do that is controversial and political, like abortion, sex changes, and political spending, engaging in the 2024 election, that's what's going up. They've made it clear what their priority is, and we shouldn't be getting the bill any longer.
Now, Planned Parenthood is fighting back. It's starting up a new campaign called I'm For Planned Parenthood, and they've enlisted several high-profile figures from Hollywood, 250 to be exact. What are your thoughts about that strategy?
Once again, they are, could not be more out of touch. If these rich and famous celebrities want to give their own money to Planned Parenthood and to big abortion, they are free to do so. What they are asking for is that your money and mine be going to these businesses so that if we never walk through the doors of an abortion clinic, they are still getting our money. That's what these celebrities are asking for. We're done footing the bill, and we are glad that this is part of the One Big Beautiful Bill.
And we're almost out of time here, but the panel says that it wants Planned Parenthood to provide statements for the amount of funding that the organization received from aborted fetal tissue since January of 2020. You know, some out there, many of our viewers don't understand that that's a business that's this organization often uses, correct?
Sadly, it is, and I would recommend that you go look at David DeLayden's videos to see the horror of the way that these babies are treated. It's not just that their lives are ended. It's far too many of them are made money off of after their death, too.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
British lawmakers have voted to decriminalize abortion in England and Wales. Groups of protesters gathered outside the parliament to voice their opposition to the measure. The approved amendment by the House of Commons would prevent women from being criminally punished for ending a pregnancy beyond the legal limit. Abortion is legal in the UK up to 24 weeks of pregnancy, and beyond that, only under special circumstances. Church leaders are also weighing in on the new measure as well. Archbishop John Sherrington, who is the head of life issues for the Catholic Bishops Conference in England, says in part, quote, This decision significantly reduces the protection of unborn lives and will result in grave harm for pregnant women. Women will even be more vulnerable to manipulation, coerced, and forced abortions. This legal change will also discourage medical consultation and make the use of abortion pills for dangerous late-term at-home abortions more likely. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a pretty cool story. Pope Leo XIV is set to resume a centuries-old tradition on beating the summer heat. Welcome back. Pope Leo XIV will resume a centuries-old papal tradition by taking his summer vacation in a lakeside town in Italy. The tradition began with Pope Urban VIII in the 17th century as a way to escape the summer heat in Rome. Castel Gandolfo confirms the Holy Father will spend his time off this summer in the lakeside residence south of Rome. Pope Leo is expected to arrive in the first week of July. Pope Francis broke the tradition in 2013 when he opted to spend the summer at Santa Marta at the Vatican. And speaking of Pope Francis's encyclical Laudato Si, in 2015 was a call to take care of the planet. 10 years later, the church is reflecting on the impact. EWTN Vatican News correspondent Valentina Di Donato has more.
Being a Catholic, it starts with the first few words of the Creed. I believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. So God our Father is our creator. And we cannot possibly say we believe in him and then misuse what he has made for us.
Care for creation has always been an integral part of the social teaching of the Catholic Church. This was something that Pope Francis underscored with Laudato Si, his 2015 encyclical that called for urgent action to care for our common home.
I live in our common home.
10 years later, after the publication, Cardinal Cerny, prefect of the Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development, spoke at the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome on what has happened since then.
Yes, Lord. A lot has changed, but not enough. To face the facts which Laudate Deum underlined, which is that we're doing too little and we're doing it too slowly. Some places are hoarding water, some places are wasting water. Those are all different issues, and we need to ask the questions where we are and act on them as best, as honestly, and as Christianly as we can. It's part of our faith.
In Laudato Si, Pope Francis teaches that environmental stewardship and social justice are inseparable. Father Alejo, a professor at the Gregorian University, spoke to EWTN about the link between care for creation and human dignity, and how the vulnerable suffer the most.
Poverty involves vulnerability. Vulnerability involves the capacity or the lack of capacity to withstand pressures, whether it's military pressure or earthquakes, etc. So the poorer people have less contacts for asking for help. They have weaker foundations in their houses. They probably don't own the land on which their houses are built. They are vulnerable.
In his inaugural mass, Pope Leo echoed the call of Laudato Si, criticizing the global economic system for marginalizing the world's poorest and the exploitation of the earth's resources.
In questo nostro tempo,
in this our time, we still see too much discord, too many wounds caused by hatred, violence, prejudice, the fear of difference, and an economic paradigm that exploits the earth's resources and marginalizes the poorest.
Cardinal Cerny, speaking to EWTN, advised people to focus on the micro issues in their own communities to solve the macro issues as a first step toward a long-term solution.
There aren't general ecological challenges. There are specific ones, real places and real people. So which challenge? So everyone needs to ask him or herself, what are the pressing challenges here and how can I be of help?
In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
taking care of the Earth. Well, we want to thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Eric Rosales. Have yourself a wonderful night. Y vaya con Dios.